I am absolutely thrilled to be joined in studio with Brezzy. Of course, you're going to be bringing us 4 exclusive episodes of Where Is My Mind. We're really excited about it. I think this is the first time we've ever done this on iRadio, so it's great to have you here.
Yeah, I'm delighted. It was just like an idea. I was just like, you know, the Where Is My Mind podcast, we've had this kind of information that we're always trying to get out to people, and iRadio being my local station,
Absolutely. Relatively,
I was like, let's give it a shot.
Definitely, because I know you're going to tour around the country as well. You know, a lot of podcasts go out on the road, but I think yours is very special because people who have been along the journey and listening to your podcast, you know, it's probably helped them through a lot. It's probably helped them kind of define who they are and what they possibly want in life and stuff. And now to actually feel it in, you know, a big wide open space with other like-minded people, you must be really excited to bring it out to all those listeners.
Yeah, I think the first thing you got to do when you go on stage is actually entertain.
Yeah.
That's, you know, regardless of what you're doing, whether it's a podcast, you're a musician, your job is to entertain the audience. And that's what the show is. Mm-hmm. You know, people are going, what kind of show is it? It's not like the podcast. It couldn't be like the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I don't sit there and just chat at people. There's a lot of music. There's a lot of spoken word, monologues, guests. It's a bit of a show.
Yeah.
And there's more laughs in it than there is anything else. Because
great.
When I look back at the state of my mind and the things that I did, because it's very much about my own mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a place to talk about anyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back at it, it is kind of funny. Dark at times, don't get me wrong.
But I think we all can be.
Kind of funny. And the big thing I look about with the podcast is trying to get across to people. The world is chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's chaos. Like, think about what we've all experienced over the last 10 years, like recessions, austerity, cost of living crisis, wars, you know, global pandemics, inflations. It feels like a perma crisis.
Yeah.
And then people just tell you to be more resilient or, you know, drink magnesium. I'm like, no.
It's hard.
I mean,
you know, and it's nice to, you know, I hate to bring up COVID so many years later, but I think we're all still trying to get out of the ways that we learned during COVID to survive and cope and everything. And whether it was listening to podcasts or watching way too much Netflix, you know, it's nice now that we can get out and you can go and see your favorite podcast people that you've been listening to and they've been keeping you going all this time. But like that, it's nice to go out and be social as well in that environment.
It is. Actually, I struggled with being social after COVID. I think about COVID is like, you don't need to lament it, but you need to process it.
Mm.
Like, what we all went through was not normal, and none of it was. And even the socialization thing, I remember going, people are like, you're allowed to socialize again. I was like, I don't really want to.
Yeah.
And I went into the first crowd of people, and I was the most awkward thing I felt like ever done in my life, and I still kind of sense it a little bit. So yeah, I do think it's not about lamenting it or but I do think it was a very weird time that when we look back in 30, 40 years, we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
How do we hustle through that stuff? But yeah, going out to the live shows, you're very aware of that when you know people have the luxury now of going to shows, because I had pulled 2 tours because of COVID.
Yeah.
Every time I announced a new tour, a new wave would come. So I stopped announcing tours because I started thinking it was my fault that these waves were coming. But I actually just went like, I want to do a tour. We did a tour in November. It was absolutely amazing. Like, it was just such a buzz to be back out doing it and seeing the different responses you get from the show. So I was like, listen, I'll go again fairly quickly. And that's the April tour, which is a fairly extensive one. Like, mm-hmm. We've nearly 18 dates in 1 month, which
wow. Is
going to be tough. But I love touring. I love touring. And I think it's once you get into the frame of it, it's a good buzz.
Definitely, because I know a lot of people would have seen, say, the Blizzards live. You know, we've often had you guys performing at iRadio events and stuff, but now I suppose when it's kind of like I like the way that these podcast shows are a bit of a hybrid, like a hybrid entertainment series. You know, there's a bit of chat, there's interviewing people, there's music and everything, you know, so even if you're used to going to a concert, you know, you get that part, but also if you're somebody who likes a good conversation, you get that as well. If people haven't been to, let's say, the first set of shows, what can they expect now with these 18 dates that you're going to be doing?
Everything you think it's going to be, it isn't. You know, when people go, where's my mind? You know, it's so funny when you see some of the lads dragged there with their partners.
Yeah.
They're saying, what am I here for? I don't want to listen to this. I want to be in the pub. And then after 10 minutes, they're kind of laughing and they're into it and they get it.
Yeah.
Because like where I feel most comfortable is on stage
and
performing. So there's a lot of music and there's kind of, you'll be telling a conversation and in the middle of that conversation, all of a sudden you're behind the piano and you're playing a track
right. That's
related to that. There's one part, the show that gets this huge response, like Kurt Cobain's death had this mm-hmm. profound impact on me as a 14-year-old and my peers. A lot of people don't understand this. Like, you know, these were words that didn't get spoken when I was in the 90s. You never heard the word suicide ever.
Ever, no.
And when he died, I didn't deal with it very well. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking the teacher what happened, and the teacher kind of screamed at me, and I'll never forget it. And there's a track called Teen Spirit, which is the words I should have heard that day.
Yeah.
And it's just about the impact that Kurt Cobain had on me, but also the impact the teacher's response did, because I felt so ashamed that I even asked him about Kurt Cobain. And still all these years later, I still think about it, and it still affects me. And I think that's the type of show it is. There's also parts of the show where I talk about people like Michael Harding, which most people listening to this probably don't know him, but he's one of the most important voices in the country.
Yeah.
And I use his work as well. So it's a lot of me weaving music among these monologues and guests, and works quite nicely.
Definitely. I like the way that you've touched on, because I think as well, when I was in school, you would have seen all of this celebrity stuff going on, like, suicide, like you mentioned with Kurt Cobain, or, even Amy Winehouse and that type of stuff. And it was almost like, no, keep it away over there. That's Hollywood, But like, whether we like it or not, these types of things were happening on our doorstep every single week, And I like the fact that now in 2024, it's okay to have a conversation like that. It's okay to learn more about it.
You have to learn more about it. You have to learn about the human condition. And this is important. Like, I always say within education, we need to understand who influences young people, because that's how you speak to them. Mm-hmm. That's how they communicate. They communicate through their influences, and it's not up to me to decide who influences them.
Yeah.
But if something happens to them, like what happened to Kurt Cobain, you have a duty of care to talk to them about it and understand that sometimes there's a pain so intense you can't. It, in Kurt Cobain's situation, it was very difficult for us to make sense of it, mm-hmm. and it was the inability to make sense of it that overwhelmed us the most.
Yeah.
So a lot of my work is especially our charity, is focused on mental health education. Let's reach out and talk to young people and let them know that these big feelings that we all have are actually very normal and can be overwhelming at times, and they can flatline us sometimes, mm-hmm. But they are very normal, and you shouldn't repress or internalize them. And I always say expression is the opposite of depression.
Yeah.
And finding the right people to talk to it about, that's ultimately what the podcast tries to do. And over the 4 episodes, like, we're looking at things like compassion, the anxious brain. I always say about the brain is never trying to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a security guard. It does an awful job of it sometimes now. Like, I call him, my lad's called Bob, and Bob doesn't take a day off, and he works all the time, and sometimes Bob gets a little bit over the top, and that's who it is. But your brain is only ever trying to protect you, and trying to change the language on this stuff. And then we're doing a really great episode in relationships, because relationships are actually the beating heart of your mental health. Good relationships, they can get messy, they can get complicated, they can get wonderful, but they're not easy, but they're so important. So we're doing a brilliant one with Louise Carroll on relationships and how we can form better, stronger, more, even intimate relationships, because some people even find that difficult.
Yeah.
Because they're not comfortable, with themselves, and it's that kind of stuff that we look at in the podcast.
Brilliant. Yeah, because I was going to touch on that, because I've been working here in iRadio a long time. I think I'm over 10 years here, but this is the first time, I suppose I cut my teeth here in iRadio, bringing in bands and everything, and now I've moved closer to, a talk role, and I interview so many different people, so it's nice to bring it all together. But I think this is the very, very first time that we're championing, bringing a professional like yourself on to share, these fantastic 4 episodes. And I'm wondering if people are thinking, right, why should I tune in? What am I going to get from this? What are they going to learn? I know you've touched on some of the topics already, but they are going to be 45 to an hour long episodes.
Yeah, and I think it's important. If anyone listening to this who has a perfectly conventional life and is never stressed or overwhelmed or has perfect relationships, brilliant. Probably don't listen to it. I've never met anyone in my entire life that has all of those things. Being a human is messy.
It is
really messy, and it is wonderful, and it is awful, and it is up and down and in and out. That's what it is. Life is not a straight line. This is what we talk about. We need to get away from this idea that these discussions are heavy. They're not heavy. What's heavy is not discussing this stuff. What's heavy is carrying it on your own.
Yeah.
And this is what we talk about. And then over the 4 episodes, the first episode I'm going to talk a little bit about why I do this, my own study and my own work and research in how I look at the human condition. And it's quite a personal episode. And the reason I get into this is because I struggled with it all my life. I never understood my own mind. I had a very bad relationship with my mind. And I always believed that my happiness lay in achievement. And it doesn't. Like, it absolutely doesn't. Mm-hmm. The goals and achievement are important, but unfortunately we're creating a modern world where that seems to be the only thing that matters. And I argue against that, really. Second one is, Richard Hogan, who's an amazing, incredible psychologist, psychotherapist. We're looking at the anxious brain and why it's so anxious, mm-hmm. and why the modern world makes us feel that overwhelm so much. And then Dr. Mally Coyne looks at compassion. How we build it, not the fluffy stuff now, not the Care Bears and Unicorn stuff, the fact that humans are flawed, and we're, Leonard Cohen says there's a crack in everything, that's how the light gets in. And then Louise Carroll from Prism Online Therapy, who is like one of the top relationship psychologists in the country, who just so happens to be my partner too, so that's an interesting one. I was like, just so people are going, oh, so you have a perfect, no we don't, nobody has, that's the point,
but at least we're willing to work on
and
it
and we're aware of
something.
It yeah, but that's the point. It's this idea that, Niall, you're a mindfulness, you're a mindfulness teacher, you must never lose your cool. That's just nonsense.
Yeah.
I lost my cool this morning on the way down here.
Yeah.
So it's grand. I think it's just about, it's a space to come to learn, to have a bit of crack, and to understand that we're all kind of pulling up this madness ourselves, and it's perfectly okay.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you had, like, you know, and I know it could be a very loaded question, but if you had a goal for, like, mental health in Ireland in, you know, 5 or 10 years, I had a conversation with somebody recently where, you know, there was a young person who was, you know, struggling mentally, and it sometimes feels as though there's not the support services there unless you're almost at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I would always advocate for mental health. I mean, I do therapy myself all the time. I had therapy today, you know, but, like, and I think sometimes you need to be a strong person to go out and seek that for yourself, you know. And I love having conversations about it because I think it's so important for people. But I think, where would we like to see Ireland in the next few years when it comes to mindfulness and mental health?
Well, the kind of catalyst for my own PhD was the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services report that came out this year. That got me to the point, was like, how have we allowed ourselves to tolerate this with children? And I'm not saying this in any way politically, just as a pure human being, I have worked with, met with, and held too many helpless mothers and fathers who've tried to get help for their children. Mm-hmm. So we need to not take a Pollyanna view of this. It's in an awful place.
Yeah.
Our systems and structures, you know, once you get into some of them, they're very effective and very supportive, and you have amazing professionals. But the problem is there's just these lines of bureaucracy, 2-year waiting lists, red tape, nonsense. And the reason I do this work is because I believe we can be world leaders at this.
Yeah.
We are a population of 5 million. We're the size of Manchester. We're internationally respected. We have a huge reputation globally. Maybe we can set the bar of what that looks like. So what that looks like for me, and the focus of my research, is early prevention. Early intervention, early prevention. What's that look like? Early intervention is, if a child is overwhelmed or their environment overwhelms them, we assess them quickly, we get what they need to support them, and whether that's therapy or that is a special needs assistant, whatever it is, we stop that overwhelm happening to them. And then the other one is early prevention, which is education. Teach kids about these big feelings and big emotions. But then you have the added layer of that. Things like, we've 3,000 homeless children in this country. We've inequality. We've inequity. We've social issues that affect people's mental health that we have to look at. So we ain't solving this problem by focusing on the health system alone. The other thing I talk about is, in 10 years' time, so society, we have to be careful about the need to put a label on every single thing and every emotion. And if you're feeling anxious, you have anxiety disorder. I'm worried about where we're going there, because an awful lot of how a lot of us feel right now is perfectly normal after a pandemic. We're tired, we're anxious, we're you know, some of us are really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that's probably how we should be feeling right now, and we shouldn't need to always put labels on this. So my PhD is focusing on that.
Yeah.
And maybe we're just all a big pile of messy humanness, and we need to be careful with that. But you're right, we don't have a health system in Ireland. We have a crisis system. We wait for people to get to point of crisis before we intervene. That doesn't work. It's expensive, and even economically it makes much more sense to focus on supporting children. But I'm not naive to think that that's going to solve all the problems. You can give as many school programs to a child, if they don't have a home to go to at the end of the day, it ain't solving their problem.
Yeah, no, you're, and like, you're totally right, but I think, you know, we are in a definitely a privileged position here, being able to broadcast these episodes, mm-hmm. being able to, you know, bring the conversation of mental health to radio, which is, I've always believed in the power of radio and the Same. Medium that it is, mm-hmm. You know, and one of the reasons I got into radio is because if you're alone, sometimes, you know, in your car, you know, you're having a bad day, you can tune into the radio and somebody is there, you know, a friend.
It's incredibly intimate, and I think actually both radio and podcasting and audio was the most important medium throughout the pandemic, for me anyway, and I think they work very well together. And as I said, when I spoke with the guys here in our radio, I was like, why don't we just, like, this is just information at the end of the day. It's about mediums, and both our jobs are to get this stuff out to people to help them. But you're right, it's an intimate medium, it is supportive, and when people listen to the show, it's important for me to personally say I never come from a place like I figured all this out either.
Yeah,
I don't know what I'm doing half the time.
Me too.
I'm not lecturing people, I'm speaking with yous, I'm speaking about this chaos that I'm frazzled by as well. But anyone who comes on the radio or on a podcast and tells you they've all this figured out is lying to you. Yeah. No one has.
No.
We've been trying for 200 years and no one's figured it out. So take a bit of solace from that.
Absolutely. We're just surviving and trying to do the best that we can.
Just hustling.
Absolutely. Brezzy, it's been a pleasure to have you in studio. No doubt it won't be the last time. If people want to, you know, check out the live shows, is there information that you can give us to have a look at the website, social media, all of that kind of stuff?
All of it's on nilebrezzin.com and across my socials. But I'll be in Athlone Dean Crow Theatre, which I just visited today, which is a beautiful, beautiful kind of really, like, very intimate, beautiful theatre, and then Hawkswell Theatre in Sligo, which is another gorgeous one, and then I'm in Esker Art Centre in Tullamore with Jason Abbey, who is my support, or my guest in the night, and here in wonderful Athlone, I've Desi Dolan, Westmeath's finest, I used to play with, who missed a penalty in an All-Ireland semi-final that I was playing, and I still haven't forgiven him for it.
No doubt you'll have a conversation about that on stage. And of course you can catch up on Where Is My Mind. They are four exclusive podcast episodes that are going to be aired right here on The Hub on iRadio.
iRadio's The Hub with Louise Clark.